Hey, it's Mike McEntee here on AM 950. Tim Pawlenty, you remember him, our governor for 8 years? Well, he wants his job back, or he's inching very close to that. He filed papers today. He says he's still exploring, but TimPawlenty.com, can go look at it. He's already taken donations. As he inches closer to running for Minnesota governor, a former Minnesota governor, Arne Carlson, tells us what he thinks about Pawlenty's previous 8 years in office. And spoiler alert, it's not pretty. We'll play back the interview here coming up in just about 4:30. We'll play that back. And then weekend conventions have put one DFLer in the lead for the 8th Congressional District endorsement. And spoiler alert number two, it's not one of the better known candidates. And when does management cheer on its employees forming a union? When it's the campaign workers that are becoming unionized. Those stories are all coming up here. But first, we're going to speak with Tim Mayer from Talk Media News about all the news that's busting loose in Washington, D.C. Hey, Tim, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Mike. Lots of news out here in Washington. You can start right now. We can talk about President Trump wants to issue the death penalty to drug kingpins and particular individuals. It's caused quite a stir among a lot of people on the left, and just a lot of people looking at this is, first of all, it's probably going to be up to the states because each different state have the death penalty. But if you want to issue a federal mandate on this, got no chance to pass.
And he went up to Manchester today, a state that he had called, a den of drug thieves or something like that during the campaign. But he came back to in Connecticut to make this announcement, to talk a lot about opioids. The death penalty thing obviously is not going to fly, at least not right now. But what did he have to say about opioids? Is there any substance to what he's proposing?
I think there's a lot of policies out there that they're trying to treat this as a health issue. It's a major health problem, and I don't think the president quite understands it, because I think when people talk about this crisis, they think of a certain demographic or a certain population. But truthfully, if you talk to people at CMS and so forth, at the Centers of Medicare and Medicaid, you're seeing a huge crisis among the Medicare population right now, as well as, and you know, the president is looking at as this is a criminal matter instead of looking as a treatment possibility, which, you know, an education. And I think that's where the big problem is right now, is this, they want to look at it as criminal versus a health epidemic in this country.
I listened to him, and he was tying this to his plan to build the wall, saying, we're going to build the wall, we're going to stop the drugs, because 90% of the drugs come from Mexico, and when we put up that wall, that'll stop it. And then he got people chanting, build the wall. I mean, this did not sound like the idea of treating people. This definitely what you're talking about. It sounds like this is a criminal matter. He's trying to turn it into a political matter.
It's pretty much politics and trying to, you know, show that he's tough on crime, pretty much Nixonian aspect. But unfortunately, these aren't real answers to a major problem in this country. This is an addiction problem. This is an overprescribing problem. This is, you know, doctor shopping, all kinds of different things that's going on in our healthcare right now. And I think the problem right now is the president doesn't see that. His solution is to attack the drug kingpin. Sure, we have to have some criminal charges and long-term sentences for individuals that are selling drugs on the street. But it's beyond that. It's people are addicted to all kinds of these drugs, particularly because of what doctors are prescribing and so forth as well. So it's not just the street drugs that's the problem. And I just don't see he has a concrete solution right now in terms of solving this. It's just one of those speeches he tries to rile up the base, and the base looks at it as a one-dimensional issue. It's a crime issue and not a health issue.
Speaking of riling up his base, the firings that have been happening here in the White House, his base wants him to fire Special Counsel Robert Mueller. Is that in the offing? Is that going to happen?
Goes back and forth. Listen, he doesn't have the authority to directly fire Mueller, he can request that Rosenstein, our deputy attorney general, to fire him. And Rosenstein can decline, similar to what happened in Watergate. But right now, you know, he's come out and he's talked tough, and a lot of his tweets have been, you know, suggesting, you know, that this guy should go, the investigation should end. His attorney got in, and his attorney basically came out and first said he was speaking on behalf of the president. Then he came back and said he wasn't speaking on behalf, he was speaking as a private individual, that Mueller should be fired. I don't think it's going to happen. And the GOP is really against firing Mueller. I think there would be quite a dissension among the GOP if Donald Trump decides to make any move toward Mueller. I think it's another thing of just trying to rile up the base, similar to lock her up, and then what's he do? Gets in the office and doesn't really want to do anything in terms of the Clinton administration or Hillary Clinton, and it was just all rhetoric and politics at the time. And I think that's what he's doing right now, tries to rile up the base on this, all of this stuff. I mean, he did, you know, ask for or recommend, I said, McCabe to be fired. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Sessions fired him after getting an independent review of what McCabe did from the ethics group and also the IG office. And they recommended firing McCabe for basically not being truthful or misleading FBI in regards to what he was leaking and other things right now. So that story, Mike, has really now evolved in a series of conservative groups, including a conservative attorneys, requesting that McCabe should be charged and indicted, similar to what they did to Michael Flynn. I mean, their argument is that even if you lie as an FBI agent, you should be held accountable for it.
Could he actually be charged?
There's a serious question of his intent, though. And actually, did he lie or did he just, you know, there's a really different standard of proof for that, though.
Could he actually be charged with something like that? I'm not familiar enough with how the process works.
Well, if they're convinced that he definitely lied, intended to lie to the FBI, he could face criminal charges.
Okay.
You know, so that's, you know, the intent is the major issue, major question, and whether they can prove that. Now, with Michael Flynn, they believe that he intended to lie, you know, to agents when he was being interviewed. Hence, that's why he was charged.
Speaking of firing people, last week we were hearing that the White House was going to be firing more people at the end of the week. Nothing happened. There's a theory going around that was maybe intentional. Tell me about that.
Well, I've been in rooms with right-wing conservatives who talked about setting up reporters, which really disgusted me. You know, listening to them talk about, you know, I told them what I thought. But this is a thing that has been going on in some time that, you know, us in the press have been extremely concerned about whether the Trump team would plant a story knowing it's false in an effort to discredit a reporter that was doing good work. For example, if you have a reporter out here who's doing some outstanding work on the Russian investigation and perhaps getting too close, he might be spoon-fed some other information by other sources linked to the White House that's inaccurate, which makes when they report it, it didn't happen. So now, you know, Trump can come out and see fake news, didn't happen, and so forth. But I also think it says something a little bit about the press. This year especially, a lot of stories have come out strictly with anonymous sources. Now, you need anonymous sources, you know, to do your job in the press, but you also have to have people on the record talking about it. But I've seen, you know, in my 30 years of journalism, I think this is the first year where I've seen a lot of stories going out, you know, hitting the wires, hitting major newspapers with nobody on the record, strictly all anonymous sources on every single thing, which is a little worrisome to me because I'm not, you know, it's hard for us and other people to check somebody else's work. We can call similar sources, they can verify it, but it's still everybody in the White House has an agenda. So we just don't know if some of these stories are true. And that particular story that said these people would be fired, there was no timeline. So maybe he fires them a year or 2 years down the road. So do we say the story is true then? There was no imminent timeline in that story, which was troublesome to think about. And now, you know, both Sanders and President Trump and John Kelly, they've told people that their jobs are safe. In fact, John Kelly just hired a deputy. So it does look like right now, for example, these jobs are safe for now, but you really never know with the president.
Yeah, when I'd be working with the reporters and somebody would want to go off the record to talk about something, they'd say, I've got this off the record. I'd always say to them, man, that handcuffs you because you, and I know that's not quite what we're talking about here, but if somebody tells you something off the record, it means you can't report it. You can't, you know, all you can do is try to go around it and try to get it from someplace else. But that, you know, that's a good technique, but I think it's being used too often. And it just ends up...
My day used to be like if somebody went on deep background, you could use it as a source, but you would always have to verify what they said. But if they went off the record, you couldn't use any of it at all. And I think you're exactly right, Mike. There's a danger out there among journalists when they hear something and, you know, then they get another person and another person and another person. I've been, as a journalist, I've seen it where, you know, even in my day where a source might talk to another source and tell them to call me. And I said, you just tell me the exact same thing the other source told me, almost the same words. That source told you to call me, so I could run this story. I would just say, simply that's not good enough because I don't think you're getting it independently on your own.
Yeah. A lot of people, when they'd sit down to do an interview with me, sometimes when I'd have tape rolling, they say, well, this is off the record. And I'd laugh at them and I say, well, then we're going to stop because we've got a camera going here. There's a recording going because I'm not going to take something off the record that we just sat down and agreed we're going to do an interview on. So in any case, kind of a divergent topic there. But it has become a problem, I think, a lot. One thing coming up I wanted to chat about, March 24th, that's about a week from now, we are going to be having one of the biggest gun protests across the country. What's going to be happening in Washington, D.C. there?
Well, a lot of students, a lot of young youth are coming to Washington, D.C., protesting the gun violence in this country, in the schools. And I think this is an unprecedented amount of people, that we haven't seen in a long time, perhaps since the Women's March, come down to Washington, D.C. on a single issue. Because Congress just has not moved much on the gun laws in many, many years, from background checks to assault weapons. And right now it's interesting that our children, like high school kids and some of the college kids, are coming out to Washington, D.C. to say, enough's enough. We want action and we want something done. And it's an amazing turn of events because these are individuals that can, if they choose to come and vote. We saw this with the Bernie Sanders movement. They can make a tremendous difference in elections. So I think the couple things to watch out for is how big is this turnout going to be? And politically, this could really be a big difference in the midterms. If people don't address this, the candidates don't address the gun issues and actually do something, they may find themselves not in office much longer.
One more note there on the midterms. U.S. Supreme Court today turned down a request to block the new maps that the Republicans want in Pennsylvania. What is that likely to do?
That's going to hurt the Republicans. I mean, that's going to hurt particularly in Philadelphia. That's going to have a tremendous impact on the 2018 midterms and so forth. So, I mean, they don't have much recourse, to stop these new district lines before the May 15th primary. So we're coming up on these primaries. And I got to say, this is not good news for the Republicans. They were banking on this ruling to come in their favor, and it just didn't.
Well, we're going to stay tuned. See, 2018, this election year is going to be a wild and wacky one. Tim Mayer from Talk Media News, I appreciate your time today.
Thank you, Mike. Appreciate being on the show.
Sure thing. We're going to take a break here, folks, but then we've got political news notes here from the Minnesota side of things. Everything from the 8th Congressional District to the governor's race, that's all coming up here next on the Mike McEntee Show.
It may seem odd to be thinking about air conditioners in Minnesota in March, but it is better than waiting until the middle of July when you can fry a steak on your sidewalk. Fortunately, Standard Heating and Air Conditioning is offering $1,000 or more off high-efficiency air conditioners until March 30th. Save money and spend the summer in cool and relaxing comfort. Visit standardheating.com for details and come visit us at the Minneapolis Home and Garden Show. Standard Heating and Air Conditioning, the comfort you deserve.
Hi, Matt McNeil for Rudy Luther Toyota. My first Toyota love was the RAV4 back in 1998. When I was traveling in February, I needed a rental car, and I jumped at the opportunity to drive one again. The RAV4 is fantastic with all the bells and whistles you need, and it has all the modern safety features to keep us safe, comfort as we vacationed. It fit all five of us and our luggage with ease. I was able to revisit my first love. Now, you can fall in love for yourself by test driving a RAV4 today at Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169.
Reach Up Head Start and Early Head Start in St. Cloud and surrounding areas take the time to say, as parents, we're entrusted with a tremendous responsibility to raise and educate our children. Volunteer your time, join a parent group, and get your child to school daily. That's Reach Up Head Start and Early Head Start, where children learn and are happy in ever-present supervision, whole or half day. For locations near you, call 320-253-8110. 320-253-8110.
Hi, I'm Dr. Scott Chambliot from Chambliot Family Dentistry. We're the fear-free, get-you-out-of-pain-now dental office.
And I'm Rachel Chambliot. Did you know a lot of people are afraid of the dentist? You don't need to be afraid of my dad. He makes going to the dentist comfortable and even fun.
We don't care if you're a dental regular or haven't seen a dentist in years. We just want to make you comfortable and get you out of pain.
If you don't see my dad, please see another dentist. Take care of your teeth because they're the only ones you get. Call 1-800-FIX-MY-TEETH or visit fixmyteeth.us.
Welcome back to the Mike McEntee Show here on AM 950. I want to get into the Minnesota politics, but we were speaking about the opioid crisis just a little while ago when Donald Trump announced today that he wants the death penalty for drug dealers. And what he was proposing were a lot of crackdowns as opposed to a lot of things that were dealing with the medical issues that we were talking about. Steve from Minneapolis had some thoughts on that, wanted to join us and talk about it. Hi, Steve. What's your thoughts here?
Hi, I just finished reading an article in Harper's Magazine, the April Harper's, called "The Pain." What was it? The Pain Refugees by Brian Goldstone, and I think it's really worth people talking about reading. What he's saying in here is that the prescription of opioids peaked in the year 2010 and has gone down every year since, but the addiction has gone up 37%, I think. And so there's something going on here besides doctors just prescribing things. And the big problem it implies is that patients need individual treatment. And they have individual problems. And prescribing opioids or taking them off is not necessarily dealing with it. It's interesting. They said that a doctor in medical school spends an average of 9 hours studying about pain, and in veterinary school, it's 45 hours. I think this is really worth reading.
Okay, what was the name of the article again then? And you said it was in the Atlantic.
The Pain Refugees by Brian Goldstone in the April Harper's.
Harper's. Okay. Well, Steve, thank you for that. I'll take a peek at that article. Thank you very much. Here, Minnesota news notes, as I mentioned off the top of the show, Governor Tim Pawlenty is edging closer to return to Minnesota politics with a run for a third term. He officially created a campaign committee with the state election boards and a website today, timpawlenty.com, if you're looking for it. It's just pretty much a fill in your email and send me money website right now. He issued a statement that said he is just exploring. It's not an official announcement. And Minnesota law, of course, requires anybody raising campaign contributions to file notice within 14 days. He's been raising money down in Naples, Florida, and he has another one scheduled for Thursday. Aaron Murphy, on the other side here, on the DFL side running for governor, is very ecstatic that her campaign workers are forming a union. Yes, they've signed a collective bargaining agreement with the Campaign Workers Guild. Aaron Murphy says they are the first gubernatorial campaign in the country to do so, as well as the first campaign in Minnesota to organize a union. And she's ecstatic about it, says, couldn't be prouder of my campaign staff. Up in CD8, Leah Pfeiffer, you remember her. We had her on the show just a few days ago. The Senate district conventions have been going on. And apparently, according to Aaron Brown at MinnesotaBrown.com, Leah Pfeiffer is the one who's been picking up the delegates. It's a messy, very complicated political wrangling. And she's apparently winning the delegates. Now, she hasn't won yet. She doesn't have the endorsement wrapped up by any means, Aaron writes. And you got to remember, she was the first one in the race. She started running before Rick Noland did. But apparently her campaign is generating enthusiasm among longtime DFL insiders. If she wins, she is probably going to face a primary challenge from at least two of the other candidates, according to Aaron, Jason Metza and Michelle Lee. Joe Rodinovich and Kirsten Kennedy also seeking endorsement, but plan to abide by it. But remember, I believe you need 60%, 60%. And if there's five candidates running, getting 60%, even in a long convention where you have attrition, is going to be tough. Some of the details here from SD6, Senate District 6 in Hibbing, is this is the heart of the Iron Range. And Aaron expected Metza to dominate here with Radinovich in second. But instead, SD6 dedicated 9 of its 20 delegates to Pfeiffer. Metza won 6, but apparently has 3 uncommitted delegates in his tally, according to 2 different campaign vote counters. So it is going to be an interesting race. It is going to be tough and down to the wire. And the winner is probably going to be going against a Republican Pete Stauber and Independence Party candidate Ray Skip Sandman. Here's something that you might be interested in. We've been talking about the kids who are trying to get gun control or gun legislation, anti-gun legislation, at least get it a hearing in the Senate in Minnesota. And so far that hasn't happened. But today, a group of high school students briefly shut down a Minnesota Senate committee hearing by calling on lawmakers to address gun violence in schools.
Sir, you are out of order.
We allow those.
You must stand down.
We demand that these bills do be given hearings and that you allow these bills to give hearings and to schedule this committee to give those bills hearings, SF3279.
You are
SF3278 and
That's how it went. School of Environmental Studies senior Josh Groven attended the hearing on an unrelated bill. It wasn't about guns at all. And he demanded that the committee hear the bills that would restrict Minnesota gun laws. Committee chairman, that was the guy you heard there banging the gavel, Senator Warren Limmer, briefly paused the hearing while Groven and others were escorted out. Groven was one of nearly 20 students who earlier staged a sit-in protest at Limmer's office to call for expanded background checks on gun sales and other measures. Limmer eventually met with the group and says party leaders are considering the students' request. As we talked about off the top of the show, former Governor Tim Pawlenty, is thinking very heavily here about running for office. So the question is, what was he like in office? If you don't remember, well, we've got somebody up next who has a pretty good memory of that. In just a few minutes, we'll be speaking with former Governor Arne Carlson, a Republican. Some could say a Republican name only, though, these days. And others would say, well, the Republican Party left him. But I talk with Arne Carlson about a variety of topics, including Governor Mark Dayton's legacy, how has he done in office, as well as Arne Carlson's plan here to fix politics. That's all coming up here next on the Mike McEntee Show.
Moe's Tax Service on Ford Parkway in St. Paul has been preparing tax returns since 1971. They're one of the most successful independently owned tax services in the country with a diverse team of highly trained and screened tax preparation experts. Tax laws and forms are always changing, and you need someone who is a dedicated tax preparation professional. Visit www.moestax.com. That's M-O-H-S-Tax.com. Or give them a call, 612-721-2026. Moe's Tax Service. They work for you, not the IRS.
Imagine a world where no one ever went hungry. Where you didn't have to choose between clean air and clean water. And where bitter, drunken comedians didn't have to work in small, dark clubs to tell you how severely screwed up everything is. If that kind of world scares you the way it scares us, then we can help. We're StandUpRecords.com. We offer the finest in CDs, DVDs, and merchandise from the best stand-up comedians on Earth. So please give generously. And remember, together we can't save the world. Yeah, no, we can't. So you may as well just buy something funny. That's StandUpRecords.com.
The Spring St. Paul Art Crawl, presented by the St. Paul Art Collective, will be running April 27th, 28th, and 29th. This is a must-do experience that you will love. Over the weekend, you'll have the chance to explore a wide variety of art while touring through local artist studios, lofts, and galleries. Hosting over 350 artists, up for purchase will be paintings, photography, pottery, sculpture, fiber arts, and more. The Art Crawl sprawls over 34 locations. Join the Art Crawl and discover outstanding art for you to own. When you buy local art, you're providing to artists so that they may continue to create the art we love. The Metro Transit is supporting the local art community with free transit passes. Download your pass to ride buses and light rail for free during the Art Crawl. Be sure to get details at the stpaulartcrawl.org. That's the stpaulartcrawl.org.
Welcome back to the Mike McEntee Show. No matter where you are on the political spectrum, you have to agree that our political system isn't working very smoothly at the moment. Dysfunction, gridlock, and propaganda are permeating the government that's supposed to be by the people and for the people. The government isn't supposed to be some alien entity that we're opposed to, but something that we all do together. So what do you do about that? Our next guest, former Minnesota Governor Arnie Carlson, is part of a bipartisan group that's trying to do something. It's a campaign to fix politics now in the 2018 cycle. Governor, welcome to the show.
Well, delighted. Thank you.
Good to have you on here. You can't fix something you don't know the cause of. So when we talk about fixing politics, what are we trying to fix? What's going wrong here?
Well, I think that's probably the best question you can possibly raise, because I think there are a number of things that, quote, have gone wrong and that we have failed to pick up over the years. The first is some kind of long-term public policy development process. We used to have congressional committees that on a bipartisan basis developed long-term policy. And yes, there were disagreements, but the goal was always the same, particularly in foreign policy. After World War II, it was clearly understood by both political parties that foreign policy is bipartisan or nonpartisan, that our differences end with our shoreline. And so over the years, we've kind of erased the guidelines. The biggest one that this reform group is concerned with is the role that big money plays in politics. And I'm being polite.
Okay.
Let me give you an example. You may recall a few months ago, 12 Republican senators went behind closed doors to draft a health care bill. Do you recall that?
Yes, I do. I think a lot of people do.
Yeah, exactly. Now, the drug industry alone pumped in about $220,000 in campaign contributions to each of those members. So let's say roughly, and I'll be conservative, let's just say it was $200,000. So here are 12 people developing health care policy for the United States, for all of its citizens, and the drug industry has pumped in over $200,000 per participant in those meetings. At what point does a campaign contribution become a bribe?
So what you're saying here is we have a government that's been bought and sold, that campaign
All
contributions...
All too often that is the case. And I think we have to be honest with ourselves and say, yes, that is the problem.
So that's the problem. How did we get here? How did we allow this to happen?
I can't really answer that question. I think it's something that slowly and steadily evolved. And both political parties participated, one obviously a lot more than the other, but nevertheless, both were involved. And that is, on one hand, there have been reform efforts over the years to try to restrict how much a person can give. But the more you press down on that reform, the more we got into so-called independent expenditures. And now you have the Supreme Court decision relative to corporate participation in candidate support. So it's a wide open field for incumbents to basically say yes to big money, because it's a lot easier to raise big money than it is to raise small money. But having said that, there are some contradictions in what I'm saying. One is that the average congressman spends about 30 hours a week on the telephone raising bucks, kind of pay, you know, for play.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing is that several campaigns, starting with Obama, really raised incredible amounts of money from the Internet. And that allowed the small donor to really participate. So I would say the money picture is slowly changing, and I think the Internet has played a large role in it. But nevertheless, it would be well for both political parties to recognize the enormous harm in allowing public policy to be bought and sold, or even the perception that public policy can be bought and sold.
Now, every time we talk about campaign financing, people bring up what you alluded to, the Citizens United decision by the Supreme Court, and that we can't do anything until something there changes. And every time we talk about that, everybody says, well, it's not going to change very fast, not until we have another election and we can put people in there who want to change it. But you're talking about changing it this election cycle. How do you do that?
It can be changed. I think it's so easy to say, well, it's hopeless. No, it's not hopeless. It was not a good court decision. It's not something I support. But I'll tell you what the state of Minnesota can do starting tomorrow, and that is change how corporations give to the political system. First of all, it should be understood that publicly held corporations are owned entirely by their shareholders. Yet, the system that we currently operate under allows management, who are employees of the shareholders, to make those donations. If we in Minnesota just compelled our corporations to obey a law that basically says you cannot give shareholder money without approval of the board of directors, that faucet would be turned off.
Can Minnesota do that? I mean, corporations operate in many, many, many states.
Yes, it can do that, but there's been no will to do it. And by the way, I may add, the guilt is on both sides of the aisle.
Okay, so
that can be done. And I hope that you will call up, says some of the leaders in the legislature, call up the governor. Find out why isn't it done here? Why hasn't it been explored here?
I think that's an excellent idea, and I don't know why it hasn't been explored. It's probably something that maybe somebody after hearing this might take up.
It's absolutely outrageous to think that your employee can spend your money without your permission.
Okay. We're speaking with former Governor Arnie Carlson, who we're talking about fixing campaign politics, or fixing politics, I should say, right now in the 2018 cycle. So that's the obvious thing that we can do. Is there something else? Because most of us are sitting
total
here and saying,
disclosure,
okay.
Total and complete disclosure. We have a right to know exactly who's paying to influence public policy.
we can't even get Donald Trump to release
this. So this is a committee for good governance, and that's as much as you want to know. No, I want to know. I want a list of who's actually giving that money. And total and complete disclosure.
We can't even get Donald Trump to release his tax returns. How are we going to compel?
I would argue, okay, you and I can't control or have very little influence over what Donald Trump does. But you know what? We have a lot of influence and a lot of control of what our local legislators and governor do. And the truth is, we haven't asked them to do it. Let me give an example. The governor should have launched, and he can still do it, a key bipartisan commission. Forget about all the politicos, but of good, solid, quality citizens. Let's work on how do we make full transparency relative to campaign contributions. How do we prohibit or change the corporate governance so that the shareholders are the ones who make the contribution and not management? That's just two big steps that we could take right here, right now.
And these are things we can do in Minnesota. Are there things that...
Why hasn't the governor come out with a bipartisan commission to set up redistricting? Let's once and for all end this nonsense of legislators putting together districts that fit their political needs. These legislators are public servants. They work for us, not vice versa. They should not be allowed to select their constituents. It's the constituents that select them. Now, Walter Mondale and Al Quie have been extremely active in this, and yet incumbents ignore the recommendations.
Now, with redistricting, you know, that I think it's a great idea, but it's the legislature, I believe, has the constitutional authority to do that. Wouldn't the governor look like he's overstepping his bounds if he stepped in and tried to do something like that?
My heavens, he vetoed their funding. No,
so the
it's
line's
not overstepping
there.
That's frankly his job. He should be pushing for this very, very hard. Very hard. Particularly after all that's happened.
Well, let's talk about Governor Dayton a little bit here, because I know he just the other day gave his final State of the State address. He was kind of wrapping up what he has done in his 8 years in office. When you look at the governor right now, how do you evaluate him? How do you evaluate Governor Dayton?
Well, I'm kind of hesitant as a former governor, frankly, to do it. So if I may, I'll refrain from making judgment, but I will make recommendations on policies that I think are germane. And let me start with this. Let me start with the stadium.
Mm-hmm.
That was an area where the governor, his administration, and the legislature on a bipartisan basis really badly bungled and wasted hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars of public's money. And to this date, there is nothing that even resembles public hearings on the subject. We endlessly pour money into huge, multi-billion-dollar public sports entities without the proper disclosure. One magazine rated the stadium deal the third worst in the country, and that was before they were aware of the fact that Minneapolis was an ongoing faucet of money. So I suspect they would rate it probably as the worst in history. But it's draining our resources, something awful, and nobody wants to speak out on it, nobody wants to do anything about it, and it just continues. Let me give you an example. Several weeks ago, the school district in Minneapolis announced a $33 million shortfall. And all that's been discussed is how can we curtail the number of school days? How can we cut back on what we provide to our students? The same week, roughly, some $79 million was sent to Glenn Taylor, the owner of the two basketball teams, Target Center, for repairs and improvements made to Target Center.
Mm-hmm.
Now, decades ago, this would have resulted in a whale of a public controversy. At a minimum, a very civilized public debate about our priorities. In today's environment, it's not mentioned at all.
Why is that?
Well, I think that question has to be raised of our incumbents. Why is that? Why are there no public hearings? Or take, for instance, the management at the University of Minnesota, stepping from scandal to scandal to scandal to scandal. I've been working for over 3 years with people on the faculty of the University of Minnesota relative to disclosure. For instance, on drug testing. This is where drug companies come and look for people to evaluate the performance of drugs. Over the decades, we've had, I think, 6 people have died. And yet, there's an absence of public hearings. There's an absence of any form of public responsibility. And nobody in management at the University of Minnesota is responsible, and the Board of Regents isn't responsible. So apparently nobody's responsible. But having said that, when I brought to their attention that their oversight responsibilities were chaired by a doctor who was in the pay of the very drug companies that were testing their drugs, nothing ever happened.
Now, when we get to next year, there's going to be a new governor here in Minnesota, and there's a crop of candidates out there, declared and undeclared at the moment, who are running or not, you know, are considering running.
Yeah.
When you start looking around, is there anybody who is going to address these issues that you're bringing up right now? Anybody that
well, that's,
you say?
That's a very fair question. I think both political parties have gone to their so-called bases, and I think we can fairly say they tend to be on the extremes. So if you're a Republican, you've got to cultivate the Trump support, the ultra-right, in order to get through that mechanism. And if you're a Democrat, you got to go through all these sub-caucuses and so-called progressive groups. That there's an absence of focus on the big, broad needs of the middle. And I think that's missing. I personally think that Tim Walz would probably be the strongest candidate to run. But I'd have to say that there's been a real absence of discussing public policy. And I'd like to see what these candidates stand for when it comes to the development of long-term public policy. Where is Minnesota going? I would like to see one of the first things is the passage of a sunshine law, which is that the public, the taxpayer, is entitled to know when, where, and how their money is being spent. I don't want issues like hundreds of millions of dollars stadiums not being disclosed. I don't want scandals at the University of Minnesota not be dealt with and no accountability built in. I think that's wrong. And we have the same thing in many, many other areas of the state of Minnesota. The public is entitled to know how, when, and why their money is being spent. And right now, that is being withheld from us.
You're talking about long-term public policy. You mentioned Tim Walz as a strong candidate.
Yeah, all of them. Where do you plan to take the state of Minnesota? What policy ideas and concepts do you have? Where are we going? Why is it you and I are talking about all these reforms on the on the elected system, and the candidates aren't?
One candidate, I think, who we've got 8 years of a record, so we know where he goes, former Governor Tim Pawlenty, is considering a run. When you look at him, do you think he might be addressing these things if he were to run?
Well, you got to ask yourself, did he address any of them when he was governor? And then you got to ask yourself, who was he in bed with? The big bone that I would pick with Governor Pawlenty is that he used the governorship of the state of Minnesota as a stepping stone to national office, and all too often sacrificed the needs of Minnesota in order to achieve his personal objective. And the result was, I think it's fair to say, we went from deficit to deficit to deficit. We borrowed from the future to prevent tax increases. And the state, frankly, was in a whale of a mess when Governor Dayton took over.
We're speaking with former Governor Arne Carlson. We started our conversation talking about how to fix politics. I want to take us back to that here for one last question.
Yeah.
Okay. You got involved in the marriage equality fight here in Minnesota, siding with the people who are trying to prevent a discriminatory amendment from being written into the Constitution. That campaign really crossed party lines. When you look at that, are there lessons to be taken from that that might help us fix politics?
Well, I was involved in two fights over the amendment. One was voter ID.
Right.
And that's where I teamed up with Governor Dayton to fight that. And obviously the other one is marriage equality. I think government has an obligation, one, to make certain that every single citizen, without exception, every citizen has a clear path to participate in voting. We want them to vote. The second part is we have no business in the privacy of a bedroom. My heavens, the federal government can't balance its budget. It can't even come close to balancing a budget. It can't develop a coherent foreign policy. Why in the world do they have so much time to focus on what two individuals choose to do?
Both those campaigns really appealed to more than just one party. Was there
Absolutely. It was a marvelous, I would argue that that was a marvelous example of when the broad middle came together. Minnesota is basically a prudent state when it comes to the expenditure of money, and it's a very progressive state when it comes to protecting individual rights. And I think that's splendid. I think that speaks so well to Minnesota and to Minnesotans. And sadly, our political parties are not quite in the middle, and they should be.
Well, I think maybe you've just laid out a blueprint for how some of them can move that direction and make that
I
happen.
I hope so. I truly hope so. I would keep my eye on Richard Painter, for instance, who's going to run for the Senate. I think you're going to find that he's going to run as a moderate. The quote that comes up, I think it's a very interesting one. It comes from Dwight Eisenhower. Was asked, are you a Republican or a Democrat? And he was a Republican, there's no question about that. But I thought his answer to that question was very interesting, and it was to the effect of, well, when it comes to issues of money, I'm a Republican. When it comes to issues of people, I'm a Democrat. Now, bear in mind, when he was talking about money back in the 1950s, he was talking about prudency and balancing budgets. He wasn't talking about these incredible deficits that the modern-day Republicans have adopted.
Well, those are... This is an interesting conversation, and I am so glad that we're having it, because if we need to have this type of conversation before we move into the next election, people do need to think about
these things.
Well,
I'm delighted. Thank you.
We've been speaking with Governor Arne Carlson. Thank you so much for your time today.
I'm delighted. I appreciate it. Thanks.
So what did you think about what Governor Arne Carlson, former Governor Arne Carlson, I should say, had to say today? A couple of things here. He thinks Tim Walz is the strongest DFL gubernatorial candidate. Got some thoughts on Tim Pawlenty running for a third term. He didn't think he didn't like him that much. Give me a call. We're going to open up the phones. 952-946-6205. That's 952-946-6205. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back with your phone calls and other news as well. So you're listening to the Mike McEntee Show here on AM 950.
I'm Adam Jennings, and I approve this message. Most politicians fall into two categories. Robots who focus group every word they say, and wingnuts who go off script and off the rails. Here's my story, spoken from the heart. I worked at the Ford plant as a proud member of the United Auto Workers. I served in the Minnesota Army National Guard. I owned a small business that helped homeless vets find housing. I've overseen a $9 billion portfolio. I'm a member of my city council, and I'm married to a pediatrician and have children who attend public schools. So I don't need a pollster to tell me what working families need. Healthcare is a right, and gun violence is a wrong. And we are the only country in the world that elects politicians who haven't figured this out. It's time for a change. You don't need a mediator or yes man in Washington. You deserve a fighter. Join me at JenningsForCongress.com and let's take our party back.
Paid for by Adam Jennings for Congress.
Hello. If your taxes from years past are talking to you from the back of that drawer in your desk, it might be about time you answered the call by making a call to Moe's Tax Service in St. Paul.
Time to come out now.
They've been preparing tax returns and creating advisory-based relationships with their clients since 1971.
Kind of stuffy in here.
Problems with the IRS don't go away by ignoring them. Call Moe's Tax Service. That's M-O-H-S. They're on Ford Parkway in St. Paul. 612-721-2026. 721-2026.
Hi, this is Gregory Rich from Habitation Furnishing and Design, and I'd like you to tune in to a new program, Drink in the Style. Sundays at 5 p.m., Drink in the Style is going to be a one-hour conversation about interior design and aesthetics, all while enjoying a cocktail created by a local mixologist. Drink in the Style, Sundays at 5 p.m., brought to you by Habitation Furnishing and Design.
Welcome back to the Mike McEntee Show here on AM 950. Last segment, we were talking with former Governor Arne Carlson. He had a lot of things to say. I was asking, what did you think about what he had to say? And we've been taking phone calls. Gary called during the interview, left us a voicemail. Here's what Gary had to say.
Yeah, I let Arne Carlson know that I'm a lifelong Democrat. To me, he was just another Republican governor. He was governor. And I heard he was a campaign for Judy Dutcher, and I really liked her, and I found out their allies and driven out of the Republican Party. And anyways, I sure changed my mind about Arne. I think I really like what he's saying here. I hope that we pass the word on. I think he's really a good citizen, waking us up to a lot of things we don't hear about.
All right. Hey, thanks a lot, Gary. Mark's on the line from Fridley. We got a little less than a minute left. Mark, hey, go ahead.
No, I agree with Gary. I think we should draft Arne Carlson. I mean, we are sick and tired of being sick and tired of expecting moderate politicians who make all these promises and then get into office, whatever color jersey they're wearing, and do the opposite thing. So, you know, this process of us electing somebody and expect them to follow up, you know, we vote this way or that way or for this guy or for that guy, and we end up with the same thing. So I liked his refresh. You know, he was refreshing. He was, you know, positive. And he comes with solutions to problems that nobody else is talking about.
All right. Mark's on the draft Arne bandwagon. Hey, that's it for today's show. Just want to remind you, though, we still don't have hearings on the gun violence bills in the Senate. Driving in the left-hand lane, muskie regulation, those things are getting hearings. This isn't. Go out there and protest, folks. You need to get them attention. We'll be here back tomorrow.